Us to Sanity, and we will hear give a warm welcome to Bill N from Palm Beach Gardens, formerly known as Billy. What I've heard this today. Bill, welcome.
Thanks. I'm Billy. I'm an alcoholic. My home group's a Tell It Like It Is group in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Yeah, it's funny. Bill is what they call me at work because they don't like Billy. And GSO would always use Bill because Billy sounds too young. But my friends call me Billy. So it's good to be here. It's good to be at the Beacon Group. It brings me back to really early pandemic times. It's like it makes me think way back when to like June of 2020. I want to say sometime around there when I first spoke at the Beacon Group online. I've been to the Beacon Group in person many times. So a couple of disclaimers out of the way. I know I'm here to speak on step two. So I'm not going to debate the big book versus the 12 and 12. So if you're a favorite of one, hate the other, whatever, I'm just not going to go down there. Not going to go down that. I might say a couple of things because this story is very personal to me. There's always a chance I could offend. Nothing I say is anti any religion or any personal beliefs that anyone has or any personal non-beliefs that anyone has. I want to make that clear. If you are, the step was already read, I do want to read something, two things just out of the 12 and 12 quick. If you have not worked this out of the big book with a sponsor, by the way, I just want to highly suggest that you start at the blank page at the beginning. If you're looking for step two, depending on the edition of the big book you have, it's you're going to find it between like pages 43, 44, and 60. But I do want to read these two paragraphs out of the 12 and 12. Let us first look at the case of the one who says he won't believe, the belligerent one. He is in a state of mind which can be described only as savage. His whole philosophy of life in which he so gloried is threatened. It's bad enough, he thinks, to admit alcohol has him down for keeps. But now, still smarting from that admission, he is faced with something really impossible. How he does cherish the thought that man, risen so majestically from a single cell in primordial ooze, is the spearhead of evolution and therefore the only god that his universe knows. Must he renounce all this to save himself? And then a couple of paragraphs later, another one of my favorites. The sponsor continues, take for example my own case. I had a scientific schooling. Naturally, I respected, venerated, even worshiped science. As a matter of fact, I still do. All except the worship part. Time after time, my instructor held up to me the basic principle of all scientific progress. Search and research, again and again, always with the open mind. When I first looked at AA, my reaction was just like yours. This AA business, I thought, it's totally unscientific. This I can't swallow. I simply won't consider such nonsense. Those two paragraphs are near and dear to my heart. And best that I explain practically how I came to terms with all of this. I would tell anybody that's new, do not let any questions in your mind stop you from going forward in the steps. If I could not go forward in the book because I simply didn't believe, I would probably be a dead man today for sure. About 12 years ago, I saw a movie, and I'm sure other people in AA have had this experience. It doesn't have to be a movie. You could be walking down the street. You could see a sign. You could run into somebody you haven't seen in a long time. But I saw a movie, and when I walked out of there, it devastated me. Because I had not thought about that topic for a long time. And, since I had been very young, like in elementary school, I was told I was different. Now, at the time, they were saying it as a compliment, not as any kind of negative at all. And I got put in classes with titles called honors or accelerated or advanced placement or enriched science. They love all these adjectives. And a real important part of my life regarding this topic is that I had been caught cheating when I was like in sixth grade. And if there's any social workers in this audience, I just want you to know I have great respect for social workers. I've just never been invited to a meeting with a social worker where I got good news in my entire life, ever. If there's a social worker present, somebody's about to tell me something I do not want to hear. And in this meeting, it was my mother, my teacher, my principal, and the school social worker to all talk to me about cheating. The problem was I did not cheat whatsoever. The teacher said to my mother that she knew I cheated because there's no way someone who acts as bad in class, on the way to school, in the lunchroom, out in the schoolyard, and walking home from school could have done this well on that test. That was their reasoning for me cheating. And I'm not here to complain that that is like, that this one event of being, believe me, that might be the only time I was ever accused of something that I really didn't do it. So let's just get that out, okay? It did not traumatize me for life. I'm just setting the stage here. Because soon after that, I realized, with the help of a teacher who kind of sent me in this direction, that I remember everything I read, or I did at that time. Every single thing. In fact, that teacher noticed it because I got an extra credit question right. And when she asked me how I remembered, I said, well, like last October, you were at the front of the room and you wrote the answer on the right-hand side of the board, like halfway down, all the way in the corner. And I don't know if she used the term photographic memory, but she told me that I had a really good memory. But by the time I went into junior high in seventh grade, which remember, that's only 2 years before I came into AA, right? Seventh grade. I realized that I remembered everything I read. And I realized that I could do math in my head and very difficult math on a small piece of paper. The only reason I tell you all that is because nothing good came from those discoveries, okay? I just realized that I don't need to study. I don't need to really go to school. I'm smarter than all the teachers. I'm definitely smarter than the rest of the students. Like, I'm just pleading guilty to the overall insane level of arrogance that came with my so-called self-discovery. And, when I came to AA, came here at 14 and in and out until I was 23. AA was a place where I got stuck in a basement where I got to smoke cigarettes with the people my mother went to church with, right? Like that's what AA was, right? All these older church-going freaks. And don't, please, if anyone goes to church, I'm just telling you my assessment as a teenager. Like all these older freaks who I could finally smoke in peace 1 hour a day when I went to AA. Without somebody pulling me out of a bathroom or a locker room or my mother yelling at me. And, when I finally got sober this time, I had a real struggle. And I had met Joe and Charlie in 1993. And that weekend kind of changed my life. And I was 3 years sober already, and I was not in custody anymore. And probably for the first time in my life, I had been saying at that time, For many years, my name is Billy and I'm an alcoholic. But after that weekend with Joe and Charlie, I kind of really, for the first time, knew what it meant when I said I was an alcoholic. Which, listen, I came into 80s AA. That is John Bradshaw, in a child, recovering Catholic, all that nonsense that you hear in AA still today. But it was present then. And I finally learned that, you know, there's no such thing as alcoholic thinking. Like, the big book is clear. Our other human thinking. We have lots of problems that other people have. Lots. But when it comes to alcoholism, we have a real clear definition, starting with the doctor's opinion, going into the preface and the forewords, into Bill's story, you know, into We Agnostics, into more about alcoholism. I always say to people, I don't care if you're a friend of Bill's. I care if you're a friend of Fred and Jim's. Like, if you're not a friend of Fred and Jim, I don't know how to help you. Like, it is imperative that you have an intimate relationship with Fred and Jim in that chapter, more about alcoholism. But, you know, as I speed up and tell this, first of all, let me just get this out. I'll handle the back of the step. Thank God the first time I spoke was never recorded, right? Thank God. I think most of us feel that way, right? You know, and remember, I was still young, so I wanted to be tough and cool and all this other nonsense. Because I thought insanity was how much I drank and drove. I thought insanity was, I'll fight you and I don't even care how big you are. I thought insanity was, I sometimes like to jump off a hotel balcony into the pool at spring break, right? I have all this insanity and, you know, I had to learn, and that Joe and Charlie first workshop helped me, that this step is only talking about one thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is the insanity for a real alcoholic to take the first drink. That's it. That is the insanity we are talking about in the first step. And that's what the big book is talking about. That taking a drink for me is like lighting a stick of dynamite. And I had to learn from Joe and Charlie that, as great as the big book was, like Superman, and had a kryptonite, like, our book is useless against the second drink. Useless. I have an allergy to alcohol. I have an obsession of the mind. I also heard a lot of old people, which, let's face it, at that time, I was defining old as the 34-year-old woman who chaired the anniversary meeting, okay? But, you know, like, I had heard this thing, you know, once a pickle, never a cucumber, right? Yeah, I've never been a cucumber, ever. Like, that might be somebody else's story. Yeah, I've had the allergy from word go. But here's what's happened to me regarding, I know the difficult word, God. See, I'm the kind of atheist at that time that is talked about in these two paragraphs I read. I'm the belligerent one. I'm the scientific mind. And I'm going to say some stuff here. And believe me, it's not meant to. I know how wrong I was. But my belief at that time is, if you needed to believe in a magic man in the sky to make your pathetic life a little bit better, have at it. I'm too smart for that. I do not need any magic man in the sky. Like, I believe in the God of science and math and intellectual capability. Which is pretty funny from a kid who had to set up 5 folding chairs just to graduate high school because I was in trouble again, right? That was the way I was allowed to go to graduation, to set up everybody's chair. But here's what happened to me. A couple of months into 1994, 95. See, after that Joe and Charlie Big Book workshop, I got a new home group that studied the Big Book. I got a new sponsor. I was into service at the time, and I got introduced to this guy, Don P. from Colorado. And I was really into the big book, you know, like the annoying stage of when someone's into the big book. You know how that it goes. You know, if I met you at another meeting, I would say that I felt bad that you went to AA Light. That if you wanted the AA the first 100 had, please come to my home group, you know? Thank God, that's a long time ago. But I had a problem, a huge problem. Like, I thought I had all my amends index cards perfect, like they taught me. I had them written out. I went over them with my sponsor. I had them broken down by never will make, maybe will make. Okay, I'll make these. I had them broken down by where people lived so that I knew when I was going to be there. But the problem I had in spring of 1995 was I didn't believe in God. And I thought that AA wouldn't work for me. And I thought that maybe that's like, maybe I had done so much wrong. And even though I didn't believe in those 10 things people called commandments, maybe I had done so many of them wrong that like God wasn't in the picture for me. And it's a strange place to be when you think about one of two options. Is it that you don't believe in God? Or is it that you believe your conduct on earth has been so bad you hope there really isn't one? That's a strange dilemma to be in. And I went to this meeting on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. I shared my little challenge that night that I was having. And a woman who I have no idea who she is today, I wouldn't be able to pick her out of a crowd. By her age at that time, she's by all odds passed away today. She came up to me and said, "Were you raised a certain way?" And she talked about the religion I was raised with. And I said, "Yes." And she wrote down the name of a book. And she said, "You know, you should go get this book. It might help you." And I went right to the Barnes and Noble at 86th and Columbus Avenue in Manhattan to the self-help religious section. I always joke around about this, like, at that time in AA, you hated going to the self-help section because you always ran into somebody else from AA. So, you know, you had to like slowly go around the corner of the self-help section. But I read that book and it changed my life in a lot of ways. But I don't believe in God because of a perfect inventory or rows and columns or because of anything I've read. I believe in God simply because I stayed sober long enough through the power of the steps to witness things that are unexplainable in the human world, to personally witness things that are not explainable. Now, I'll end by telling you what happened slowly after I read that book. Slowly, yet kicked me in the ass for sure. I went to the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous 2 months after I read that book. I wanted to go to one meeting, the corrections meeting, because I knew three people were going to be there. I knew Tom I was going to be there. I knew Don P was going to be there. And I knew a non-alcoholic named Jim Estelle, who ran the Texas prison system, was going to be there, who had served as a trustee on the board of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was a line out the door with like 400 people on it and a fire marshal counting the people to get in. The guy next to me and him started talking. We had both been incarcerated sober. He had done a bunch of years in Oklahoma's state prison system, and he was 11 years sober. He had gotten out a year before. If you remember, a couple of months before the International Convention in 1995, there was a large bombing in Oklahoma. And he told me that every week he asked his parole officer if he could go to the International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous in San Diego over July 4th weekend. And every week his parole officer told him no. And then that bombing happened, and his parole officer cursed him out and threw him out of the office. Said only two people can get you to that convention. God or the governor? And as we were online waiting to go in, he took a piece of paper out of his back right-hand pocket. It looked like a report card that I got that I never gave my parents that's been washed like six times in the washing machine. You could tell it had never left him since he got it, and he unfolded it and handed it to me, and in the bottom right-hand corner was the raised seal of the governor of Oklahoma. And as I read that letter, it had his name and his parolee number and his date of birth and his address. And it said, to whom it may concern, the above individual may attend the International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous over July 4th weekend, 1995, in San Diego, California. I left that convention center. My atheist or agnostic armor had taken such a huge hit that day. I guess because I didn't want to believe that something like that was possible. Maybe, probably. So thank God, you know, I come from a family of avoidance people. I don't know if you know people like that. It means if you're sick, just don't avoid it. You know, don't go to the doctor. Don't go to the dentist. It'll go away if you just, any problem in life, just don't deal with it and avoid it. Well, I returned home a couple of days later. And that Wednesday night, I went to the Oxford Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It met on 84th Street between Columbus and Central Park West. And I used to go there because the archivist at GSO, a man named Frank M., used to go there. And there was a very elderly but classy, kind of distinguished-looking elderly lady sitting at the speaker table. And I didn't know who she was. And when she introduced herself, she said her home group was in Tel Aviv, Israel. She had a number tattooed on her forearm. She had been in a concentration camp as a child. She said that she had been on a pilgrimage to go to GSO and Stepping Stones on the way back from San Diego. That the Friday night before, she was behind Jack Murphy Stadium to carry the flag for Israel in the flag ceremony. And that behind that stadium, because all the countries are in alphabetical order, she had hugged and cried with people carrying flags from countries that supposedly hate each other. And I remember leaving that meeting that night like another huge hit to my atheist armor, just so piercing. And then a couple of months later, there's a meeting at GSO, 11 o'clock every Friday. I went to the meeting at GSO. And the gentleman speaking was the corrections chair from Ireland. Now, my parents are first generation Irish, deceased now. My grandfather came from a prison, a British prison on the Isle of Wight. My family has a definite opinion on what goes on in Ireland, especially at that time, what we call the Troubles. And I was raised to believe a certain way for sure. I had relatives, cousins who were incarcerated in Ireland. And I'll never forget that corrections chair talking about Mays, the H block, if you don't know what that is. That's where the Protestant and Catholic prisoners of the Troubles went. They all went to Mays. And I remember him saying that Mays was such a high, secure facility that no outside organization, even the Red Cross, did they let in, except for one outside organization. One night a week for 1 hour, two men from Alcoholics Anonymous came in and brought in a meeting. And every other hour of the week, Protestant and prisoner and Catholic prisoners were never in the same room, except for one night a week for a 1 hour meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I left there that day. You're not, listen, I know there are people who are more religious to me, but they don't believe in God more than me. That's why I hate the saying, your disease is in the parking lot doing push-ups. This whole my disease, this whole negative recovery that you're always going to be broken, total garbage. If my disease is in the parking lot, my God is at CrossFit. That's what I say. My God is super powerful. My God is able to restore alcoholics in the scrap heap and restore them to being worthwhile, decent human beings who don't have to drink a day at a time. Thanks for having me out today.
Thank you very much, Billy.